Joining me now on Inside Ivy Hoops, fresh off his team's road sweep last weekend, is Cornell coach Brian Earle. Coach, thanks so much for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, our pleasure, truly. Last weekend was a weekend to remember for followers of the Big Red. An 83-80 win at Dartmouth that featured a career-high 41 points from Matt Morgan, followed by a 46-point second half at Harvard that led to a 67-61 victory. To go in reverse chronological order, did you feel like your players were getting higher quality shots or attacking differently in that second half at Harvard, or was it really as simple as finally getting shots to fall?
I think it was a little bit of both. Our defense sort of picked it up in the second half, and we were able to maybe get out and run a little bit more, and that led to a couple easier baskets rather than in the half court where Harvard's really difficult. So I think it was, I don't know if you can point to one thing. I think it was just a number of things that came together. Harvard had played a triple overtime thriller against Columbia the night before, and I don't think anyone in their program would admit to it being a factor, but I think it was probably a factor. You know, they were missing one of their key guys. And I know after the game, watching a few other guys walk out of the gym, they were hurting a little bit. So there's a lot of things that sort of broke our way in that second half, especially.
Well, whether Harvard's fatigue was a factor or not, your defense certainly stepped up in that second half, outscored Harvard 23-5 in points off turnovers. And that brings up the fact that your team has, at least statistically, but also according to the eye test, has enjoyed significant improvement on the defensive end of the floor this season. Your team has the highest defensive turnover percentage so far in Ivy play, according to KenPom, season after finishing seventh in that category. Last season, you ranked among the bottom 20 teams or so in Division I in defensive three-point percentage. This season, you're in the top 80. You're in the top four defensively overall in the league. All these are numbers, I guess. But what do you attribute the better defensive numbers this season so far to?
Well, I think it's a lot of work in the off season and preseason, getting our guys to understand that we're gonna try to build something that starts with defense, and everyone sort of bought into that in the program. And you know, we lost a player who scored a bit for us, and you know, I think every time someone graduates or moves on, everyone says, how are you gonna make up those 17 points? But there's the other side of the ball too, where you can make up some points by playing better defense. And you know, Josh Warren has played a ton. Is a surprisingly good defender as a center, where he can guard people that you don't think he can guard, and switches and stuff like that. So I think it's a combination of really digging in and trying to get better individually and as a team, and then some personnel changes, including Steve Julian, I think among the best or the best defender in the league in one-on-one and help situations.
Yeah, I think that's a obviously great observation. I think Steve Julian's getting the accolades for his defense, much like the Justin Bassies or Trey Phils of the league at this point. So,
and you have to put probably Miles Stevens in there too.
Yes, yes. Let's not forget him. Absolutely, but no, that's. And that's a good point, too, about Josh Warren and what he's been bringing on the interior defense, too. Flipping over to the other side, Matt Morgan, Friday night, of course, surpassed Dartmouth's Jim Barton to become second on the all-time Ivy scoring list, behind only Bill Bradley. One of the things that I've found most impressive about Matt Morgan throughout his career is how his offensive rating he needs to stay high as his usage goes up. He actually gets more efficient as he factors more heavily, generally, into the offense, which isn't the norm. When you have a scorer as historically explosive as Matt is, how does that influence what you can do on offense?
I think it has a lot of effects. I mean, earlier in the season, our numbers are most likely skewed, I think, because we took some losses. I'm thinking of Colgate and Delaware at home. Pretty bad losses, I think, by 17 in both, because we didn't know how we were going to score. And it was sort of a lot of guys standing around saying, well, when's Matt going to come get the ball? And the thing about Matt is he's a completely unselfish player. He's a guy who likes to see the ball go through the basket, not just, you know, thrown at the basket. So it took us a while to sort of figure out how offense was going to come and who was going to step up and make some open shots and make some difficult plays. And so I think we've grown a lot. And Matt, again, is, I think his speed, his shooting ability is only trumped by his IQ. And he likes to be efficient out there. And so he's willing to cut for his teammates to get them open. He's willing to defer to let them take a shot. And, you know, again, he's been so efficient and with such a high usage rate. But I think it's because he's brought his teammates a little bit along in the offensive side of things.
Certainly makes sense. So it's been a thrill to watch him in the league for 4 years, that's for sure. Your team hosts Yale Saturday, but up first is Brown. You've won 3 in a row now against the Bears. What stands out to you about Brown this season?
Well, I just think they go hard, you know, and I've known their coach, Mike Martin, for a long time. I watched him as a player, and he went hard. And, you know, there's never a lack of effort or will to win out of him when he was a player. And I think he's got a team that is the same way. You know, that they're always going hard. They're always going to put the heat on you. And that's a scary thing, especially with how young the team is. But it sort of takes after the coach. And so, you know, with them coming up, I think record-wise, you know, we've had a nice little run here, but we definitely let our guys know that we're not going to walk over anybody. In fact, they're going to bring it to us, and so we have to be ready right from the jump to play for 40 minutes and sort of a reflection of the way those guys have been coached. And it's fun to see until they come to play you.
Right. So you've got Brown followed by Yale this weekend. For those of us who wonder, how do you, broadly speaking, I'm not getting into any trade secrets here, but how do you typically go about preparing for opponents in a back-to-back? How do you portion out prep time with such a quick turnaround built into your schedule?
Yeah, I mean, in the Ivy League, and I think it was always done this way when I was a player and through my coaching, is that you have to concentrate on the Friday night opponent in the day or two leading up to the Friday night game. So earlier in the week, you're actually taking care of the Saturday night opponent. And then the last day or two, we're into Brown and how we want to game plan them. And then Saturday leading up to the Yale game is just a refresher with video and some walkthrough stuff on what Yale's going to bring that's different.
Right, right. Yeah, that's I've heard that from other coaches too. I guess that is kind of a general approach, default right. Approach maybe. Yeah. You've gotten to experience the grind of Ivy back-to-backs both as a player at Princeton and as a coach. And we know that the Ivy League, some athletic directors, coaches, other stakeholders are reviewing Ivy back-to-backs, considering whether to tweak them. Are you in favor of leaving Ivy back-to-backs as they are now, or would you like to see a change in the conference scheduling status quo?
I think I'd be willing to test a couple things and see what the best way to do it is. You know, I don't know if that's a Friday, Sunday, and there's so many things that go into the decision, but I will tell you it is a difficult few days on the student athletes. So if you're traveling to Dartmouth, that's a 5.5 hour ride. Play them, get in the bus, get to Harvard late that night, and then you play that game, win it, which we did this time. 10 o'clock, you get on the bus, and it's a 5 hour ride home. And so there's not, you know, you're hoping that they are sleeping on the bus and taking care of themselves, but it's really sort of a difficult few days. And then you spend a little bit of time trying to get them back to normal. And so I don't know, I think the Ivy presidents and everyone's working to do what's best for the student athletes. And, you know, hopefully we're getting a ton of input from different people about how to do that. But I might be in favor of just a little bit more time on the road and a little bit more conservative schedule.
Yeah. Is there any discernible difference in impact in traveling for back-to-backs from Princeton and traveling from Ithaca? I mean, teams often complain about having to make the trek to Ithaca as part of back-to-backs, but that's a haul that, you know, as you obviously alluded to, you have to make to start every league weekend away from home.
Right. That's probably the reason why I'm not sure if I'm in favor of a day in between, because this is sort of the hardest back-to-back. You got to go to Columbia and then it's 4 hours in the bus. So yes, I'm shamelessly on my side of things. When I was at Princeton, it wasn't the same thing. You would have to do the Cornell Columbia trip and it was a drag, but everyone who was playing Penn Princeton was doing a 45-minute ride down the down 95. So, but it's, I'm glad to sort of be on this side of things as a tired opponent. We'll roll into Ithaca really early in the morning.
You'll take an advantage where you can get it. Sure.
Right. Exactly.
How about, and this is kind of an obvious question on a perennially hot button issue, but how do you think is the fairest way to determine where the Ivy tournament ought to be held? Robin Harris was on the podcast to start the Ivy season, and she said that, you know, it's feasible that any Ivy arena could host the tournament. What do you think is the best way to go about that?
I think I'd be in favor of a neutral, and I think that most people would want a neutral court, and I think anything beyond that is just sort of luck of the draw or however we're doing it now. And so this year it's in New Haven, and Yale's got a good team, and the past 2 years it was at the Palestra, and Penn did maybe better than they were supposed to. And so I sort of, having been in the Ivy League so long and playing in those gyms, and I would just like to see it maybe be a bit of an event in New York City somewhere, and see if we can figure it out. Now, I know everyone's working really hard to get to that point, so that might be something we can work towards, but anytime you have it in a home gym, I think there's a little bit of advantage that comes with it, and I'd like to see that get out of the tournament.
Yeah, it's, I guess, the advantage from a marketing perspective. Everybody knows where it's going to be, but of course that's inherently arbitrary. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think everyone's trying to make it the best it can be, and I just think with the power of Manhattan, and the Ivy League has a few people who can probably make that game. If you can get somewhere in that area, that would be my ultimate dream, to have it where the Wall Street guys can show up. But we're all working towards what's best for the league. And this year it looks like it's New Haven.
It was 20 years ago that you were named Ivy Player of the Year. What's the biggest change in the Ivy League basketball landscape from when you played, do you think?
I think it's got to be top to bottom, that everyone's really competing. And, I think everyone was doing their best on the court back then, but really it was Penn and Princeton at the time that we sort of would flip three straight years or four straight years with Ivy titles, and it would go to the other side. And you had some pretty good teams that would pass to maybe take a second place somewhere along that line. But I think just the amount of talent and the level to which every program is now throwing everything they can behind it to have competitive teams is something that you didn't see back in my day, where you're just going hard against the guys from Philly.
Yeah, it's not a Penn Princeton duopoly anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You've now coached five games against Princeton for the Big Red. Has that gotten any easier or any less awkward the past few seasons coaching against your alma mater?
I think when you get in the game, all the awkwardness goes out of it. I still. And I think once the guys I didn't really coach graduate, it might get a little easier too. I you still have a number of guys there that I recruited and would do anything for. Devin Kennedy, Miles Stevens, Noah Bramwich, these guys who I've known for a long time now. And, so it's hard to go out there. And last year we managed to win in triple overtime, and it was great and one of our best wins and sort of sent us to the Ivy tournament next breath. My guy Amir Bell was a senior, and so that I'd love to get rid of that, where I don't want to see those guys fail. And so that'll make it easier as I go forward. And once we get rid of that, I think only Mitch is the problem. One of my best friends is the head coach there. So, but it doesn't make it any less competitive, I'd say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you got one more against them this season, and then,
Right.
Time marches on. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much, Coach Earl, for coming on. We really appreciate our Cornell and Princeton listeners will appreciate it for sure. Best of luck the rest of the season here. Thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it.